Hi, I'm Daniel Lukis.
And this is Nick, the Doctor of Digital.
And welcome to Music 101. Music 101 is created to empower music itself and legendary icon in the music industry. Another week, another great episode. Haunted melodies, how every decade shaped the sounds of Halloween.
Yes, indeed. Before the costumes and candy, before the haunted houses and horror films, there was the sound, the eerie rhythm that made October come alive. From the laughter of the Monster Mash to the haunting synth of Halloween, the soundtrack of fear has evolved with us for nearly a century. Each generation has scored its own version of the macabre, translating its anxieties and fascinations into music, from the playful to the profound. What began as novelty and nostalgia has become a mirror of our own collective imagination, echoing the changing spookiness of haunted culture.
Indeed. And Mr. Mick, Halloween music is everywhere this time of year, but most people just think of a Monster Mash and Thriller. There's got to be more to the story, right?
Oh, absolutely. The Halloween music is this fascinating window into how American culture has evolved over the past 70 plus years. What's really interesting is that each decade brought its own anxieties, obsessions, and cultural movements, and the music reflects all that. From Cold War paranoia in the 1950s to the psychedelic mysticism of the 60s, the theatrical rock of the 70s, and the commercial explosion of the 80s, Halloween music tells us much about society as it does about monsters and witches. The 1950s is where Halloween music really takes off as a cultural phenomenon, and it's no accident. Post-war America was obsessed with the supernatural and the unknown. You had UFO sightings, atomic age anxieties, and this growing fascination with horror as entertainment rather than genuine fear. The music reflected that perfectly. Hands down, the most important song is I Put a Spell on You by Screamin' Jay Hawkins from 1956. The song is absolutely revolutionary. Hawkins wasn't just singing, he was performing. Long before anyone knew what a nose ring was, Screamin' Jay Hawkins created this theatrical, almost operatic display of obsession and desire wrapped in supernatural imagery. His live performances were completely dramatic. Coffins, smoke, wild costumes. He basically invented shock rock decades before Alice Cooper or Marilyn Manson. The song itself explores themes of possessiveness and attraction through this lens of voodoo and spellcasting. And Hawkins' raw guttural delivery made it feel dangerous and real. Artists like Nina Simone, Creedence Clearwater Revival, and Annie Lennox have all covered it because there's something timeless about that primal emotion. Love Potion Number 9 is a popular song from the 1950s that tells the story of a man who visits a gypsy to obtain a love potion after being unlucky in love. In conclusion, the 1950s kicked off themes of Halloween, which influenced everyone from the crazy world of Arthur Brown to the entire theatrical rock movement.
Mr. Meg, that's pretty heavy for the 1950s. Were there a lighter takes on Halloween themes?
Absolutely. You had Sheb Woolley's The Purple People Eater in 1958, which hit number one on the Billboard charts. This was pure novelty, a creature from outer space that comes to Earth and becomes a rock star. It perfectly captured that 50s fascination with space and aliens, but made it fun and kid-friendly. Woolley had this distinctive voice that made the song instantly memorable, and while it's goofy by today's standards, it shows how Halloween themes were becoming part of mainstream pop culture rather than something scary. In conclusion, the Cold War era needed some levity, and these novelty songs provided it.
Indeed, they provided it. What about songs that leaned more into traditional supernatural themes?
Well, Witch Doctor by David Seville in 1957 is crucial here. Seville, who would later create the Chipmunks, pioneered this high-pitched, speed-up style, vocal style that became hugely influential. The song tells the story of a guy seeking advice from a witch doctor to win over his crush, and it's got this incredibly catchy, repetitive chorus that just burrows into your brain. What's significant is that Seville was popularizing the witch doctor theme in mainstream American music, bringing these exotic, mystical elements into suburban living rooms. It's often credited as one of the first songs to really make the witch doctor theme a Halloween staple. Then you've got Ghost Riders in the Sky by Vaughn Monroe in 1959, although it became a Halloween standard throughout the 1950s. Written by Stan Jones, it's this haunting cowboy tale about ghostly riders chasing devil cattle across the sky, warning a cowboy to change his sinful ways or be doomed to join them forever. Monroe's deep, commanding voice and that dramatic orchestral arrangement create this sense of doom and supernatural judgment that's absolutely captivating. The song has been covered by everyone from Johnny Cash and Willie Nelson to Elvis Presley and even Debbie Harry from Blondie. In conclusion, that's how powerful and adaptable it is. It transcends genre and speaks to these universal themes of redemption and morality.
So the 1950s essentially created a template for Halloween music as we know it, Mr. Meg.
Exactly. The 1950s established that Halloween music could be theatrical, could be novelty, could be genuinely spooky, or could explore deeper supernatural themes. It moved horror and the supernatural from something frightening to something entertaining, a crucial shift in American culture. Post-war prosperity and suburban expansion meant families had leisure time for holidays like Halloween, and the music industry was smart enough to capitalize on that. Radio was king, and these songs got massive airplay. The decade proved that there was a commercial market for seasonal music with a spooky twist. In conclusion, the 1950s laid the foundation by showing that monsters, witches, and supernatural themes could sell records and become part of American popular culture, setting the stage for even more adventurous explorations in the decades to come.
How did the 1960s change Halloween music?
The 60s took everything the 1950s established and cranked it up to 11, while also adding serious cultural weight. You've got the British invasion, psychedelic rock, the countercultural movement, Vietnam War anxieties, and this explosion of experimentation in music. Halloween themes became deeper, darker, and way more interesting. The supernatural wasn't just fun anymore. It became a metaphor for societal change and inner exploration. Consider Werewolf by The Frantic. This was recorded in 1960. The Ventures took this and renamed it on their Ventures in Space album from 1963. The werewolf sounds came from the singer directly into this Newman microphone as he snarled. And the one song everyone knows from 1962 is, of course, Monster Mash by Bobby Boris Pickett. This is the ultimate Halloween anthem, and its story is fascinating for both an artistic and business perspectives. The consistent yearly resurgence of such songs allows investors to forecast performance with greater accuracy, ensuring returns during specific periods. Pickett created this theatrical novelty song about a mad scientist whose monster throws a party, and it became an instant classic. But here's what's really interesting. The song demonstrates the incredible power of seasonal catalog music. Monster Mash lies basically dormant for most of the year with minimal streams and sales. But as Halloween approaches, both metrics spike dramatically. We're talking about 1 in 100 U.S. track sales during Halloween week being Monster Mash. That predictability makes it an incredibly valuable copyright. Investors can forecast its performance with accuracy. The song generates an estimated $1 million annually in combined revenue, and these numbers have roughly tripled from 2019 to 2023 thereafter. There's even licensing for greeting cards, wreaths, plush toys, and planned stage musical. Alan Sherman released Creepy, Eerie, Spooky, Scary, Haunting Halloween Song in 1963, but it remained popular throughout the 1980s. Sherman was famous for Hello Mudda, Hello Fada, and his humorous albums like My Son, the Folk Singer, that parodied traditional folk music and Jewish culture. His Halloween contribution maintained that comedic tradition, showing that novelty still had a place even as Halloween music became more sophisticated. In conclusion, it's proof that kitsch and niche markets can be extraordinarily profitable when they tap into cultural traditions and nostalgia.
That's incredible, Mr. Meg. What about the television theme songs that become Halloween staples.
1964 was a landmark year because both the Addams Family theme by Vic Mizzy and the Munsters theme by Jack Marshall and Bob Mosher premiered. They weren't originally Halloween songs, they were TV themes, but they became permanently associated with the holiday. The Addams Family theme, with its iconic finger snapping and those unforgettable lyrics, they're creepy and they're kooky, mysterious and spooky, is instantly recognizable. Mizzy not only composed it, but sang it himself, overdubbing his own voice to create the harmonies. The Munsters theme went in a different direction with this surf rock style instrumental that captured the early 60s musical trends. Both shows featured quirky monster families, and their themes have endured in popular culture throughout countless adaptations and reboots. In conclusion, the fact that they premiered the same year and competed for the same audience speaks to how mainstream monster culture had become.
The 1960s also brought more serious, mystical takes on supernatural themes, right?
Absolutely. Season of the Witch by Donovan in 1966 is a perfect example. This isn't a novelty song at all. It's the psychedelic folk exploration of change, transformation, and the cyclical nature of time. Donovan's using the witch as a symbol for the constant flux of existence, the inevitable change we all face. The instrumentation with electric guitars and sitars creates this dreamlike, mystical atmosphere, and that repeated refrain, "Must be the season of the witch," reinforces that change is constant and unavoidable. This is countercultural philosophy wrapped in supernatural imagery. The song invites listeners to explore their subconscious and confront the shadow aspects of their psyche. It's meditation disguised as a spooky song, and it reflects the 60s fascination with Eastern philosophy, psychedelia, and inner exploration. Then you've got Jimi Hendrix with Voodoo Child, Slight Return in 1968. While not explicitly a Halloween song, it dives deep into themes of voodoo and African mysticism. Hendrix was exploring spiritual realms through his music, using the idea of the voodoo child born with special connections to the spiritual world. His virtuosic guitar playing and soaring vocals create this sense of sonic exploration that's absolutely groundbreaking. In conclusion, the song is a masterclass in psychedelic rock and shows how supernatural themes had become vehicles for serious artistic expression rather than just novelty.
Indeed. So, Mr. Meg, how about the theatrical performers who really embrace the horror aesthetic?
Well, the crazy world of Arthur Brown, their 1968 hit Fire, is essential to understanding how Halloween music evolved. Arthur Brown called himself the God of Hellfire, and he performed wearing flaming helmets and elaborate costumes long before Ozzy Osbourne, Kiss, or Alice Cooper made theatrical rock mainstream. That opening, "I am the God of Hellfire, and I bring you fire," is one of the most recognizable and influential openings in rock history. Brown was creating this intense, surreal exploration of fire as both a destructive and transformative fire, similar to the Hindu goddess Kali. In conclusion, the theatrical elements, the face paint, the costumes, this was proto-shock rock, and it influenced generations of performers who understood that visual spectacle could enhance musical impact.
And Mr. Mick, we can't forget Black Magic Woman, right?
Originally recorded by Fleetwood Mac in 1968 with Peter Green on vocals, but Santana's 1970 version, which they famously performed at Woodstock in 1969, became the definitive take. The full original Woodstock performance of Black Magic Woman is a 5 minutes and 15 second medley with Gypsy Queen, isn't in the theatrical cut, but high quality clips from the era's recordings and a fan uploads capture the essence. For the broader set context, check Santana, Soul Sacrifice, 1969 Woodstock Live HQ, the acid-fueled percussion jam that stole the film, where chaos births freedom. Santana infused the song with Latin rhythms and Carlos Santana's signature guitar work, essentially pioneering Latin rock fusion. That Woodstock performance was a huge moment because Santana was relatively unknown at that time. Their debut album hadn't even been released yet, but that fiery set featuring Black Magic Woman and Soul's Sacrifice with Michael Shreve's extended drum solo launched them into international stardom. The song's mysterious, intoxicating lyrics combined with those powerful guitar riffs create this captivating listening experience. Fleetwood Mac's version was more bluesy and rock-oriented, while Santana made it groove with those Latin influences. In conclusion, both versions work, but Santana's became the Halloween standard.
The 60s also produced some darker, more introspective material, didn't it?
Darkness, Darkness by the Youngbloods in 1969 is a perfect example. Written by Jesse Colin Young, it's a poetic, introspective exploration of the human condition while Young's soaring vocals and folk rock instrumentation. The lyrics, Darkness, Darkness, Be My Pillow, Take My Hand and Let Me Sleep, are hauntingly beautiful. One theory suggests Young wrote it for GIs in Vietnam to help them find peaceful sleep amid the horrors of war. That's heavy, and it shows how supernatural or dark imagery could express real human suffering in the search for comfort. The song reached number 25 on the Billboard Hot 100 and became a staple of the era. Mott the Hoople covered it in 1972, and bar bands still perform it today. It has that timeless quality because it speaks to universal human experiences of fear, yearning, and the need for peace. Bad Moon Rising by Creedence Clearwater Revival, while from 1969, became a Halloween staple through the 70s and 80s with its ominous lyrics and swamp rock sound. The 1960s transformed Halloween music from simple novelty into a vehicle for serious artistic expression and cultural commentary. The decade showed that supernatural themes could explore inner consciousness, societal anxieties about war and change, and spiritual seeking. Psychedelia opened doors to mysticism and exploration that made Halloween themes more sophisticated and meaningful. In conclusion, the 60s proved that spooky music could be profound, that monsters could be metaphors, and that the supernatural could be a lens through which artists examine the human condition, paving the way for even more theatrical and commercial explosions in the decades ahead.
Mr. Mick, the 1970s seems like they took these theatrical elements of the 1960s or the 60s and made them bigger and bolder. What happened?
The 1970s were all about spectacle, arena rock, and embracing darkness as entertainment rather than something to fear. You had the rise of album-oriented rock, FM radio giving artists more freedom, and audiences hungry for bigger, more dramatic performances. Horror became mainstream in film with movies like The Exorcist and The Omen, and music followed suit. Halloween themes became less about novelty and more about creating atmosphere, mood, and genuine artistic statements about mortality and the supernatural. Alice Cooper's entire catalog became Halloween essentials, particularly Welcome to My Nightmare and Feed My Frankenstein, which showcased his theatrical shock rock persona. Cooper inherited Arthur Brown's theatrical legacy and commercialized it brilliantly, becoming the godfather of shock rock with his guillotines, snakes, and elaborate stage shows. These songs proved that Halloween music could become an artist's broader catalogs, not just singles explicitly written for the holiday. There is even a defining Halloween song, Don't Fear the Reaper by Blue Oyster Cult in 1976. This is a masterpiece of rock music and philosophical contemplation disguised as a spooky song. That haunting melody and the iconic guitar riff are instantly recognizable, and Eric Bloom's vocals perfectly capture the song's message about accepting death as a natural part of life. The lyrics speak about the inevitability of death, 40,000 men and women every day who meet their end, painting this vivid picture of mortality. The reference to Romeo and Juliet serves as a reminder that even the most passionate love stories end in death. What makes this song brilliant is its use of symbolism and literary references to add depth and complexity. It's not trying to scare you. It's encouraging to approach death with acceptance and peace. That repeated line, "Don't fear the reaper," is almost comforting in its insistence that death is natural, like the seasons, wind, sun, and rain. The song invites genuine philosophical contemplation about mortality while being musically captivating, It's thought-provoking and introspective, challenging listeners to conform and confront their own mortality, while the haunting melody creates this atmosphere of contemplation. In conclusion, it remains a classic rock anthem that resonates across generations because everyone faces these same existential questions.
What about the more experimental or instrumental tracks, Mr. May?
Frankenstein by Edgar Winter Group in 1973 is essential. This rock instrumental showcases powerful guitar riffs and energetic tempo, but what really sets it apart is that spooky flying saucer middle section. It's arresting and completely unusual. Winter was fusing rock, jazz, and blues elements to take listeners on this musical journey that's both captivating and innovative. His masterful musicianship and knack for dynamic arrangements are on full display. The song became a massive hit and proved that Halloween-themed music didn't need lyrics to be effective. The title's reference to Mary Shelley's 1818 novel connects it to that classic story about creation, responsibility, and the consequences of playing God, themes that resonate in both the novel and Winter's musical creation. Both explore the idea of creation and its impact on the creator and the world. It's a timeless classic that continues to inspire and shows the enduring power of music to transcend time and genre. Then there is The Werewolves of London in 1978. This is Warren Zevon at his best, clever, irreverent, and completely catchy. Released on the album Excitable Boy, the song features these vivid, humorous lyrics about the werewolves roaming the streets of London. Zevon had this incredible storytelling ability, and he creates these unforgettable images. A werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through Soho in the rain, looking for Lee Ho Fooks to get beef chow mein. That's brilliantly absurd. The song is a tongue-in-cheek tribute to the horror genre, with references to Lon Chaney and Lon Chaney Jr., that hairy-handed gent who ran amok in Kent. And that warning, he'll rip your lungs out, Jim. Zevon's clever wordplay and that infectious chorus, with its distinctive howling sounds, make it both entertaining and memorable. It became a cult classic and showcases his talent for blending rock, humor, and horror seamlessly. The upbeat tempo and catchy melody make it a favorite that continues to resonate with audiences of all ages. In conclusion, it's irreverent fun that doesn't take itself too seriously while still being musically excellent.
The 70s also brought New Orleans mysticism and Halloween music more prominently, didn't it, Mr. Mike?
Dr. John was crucial here. I Walk on Gilded Splinters from his 1968 album Grigri, though it became a Halloween staple through the South of the 70s, is this memorizing enigmatic masterpiece. And Dr. John, also known as the Night Tripper, combined voodoo-inspired rhythms, blues, and psychedelic rock to create something unique. His gritty vocals and intricate instrumentation create tension and intrigue that pull you in. The lyrics speak of magical rituals and dark imagery, offering a glimpse into New Orleans voodoo culture. That title, I Walk on Gilded Splinters, suggests decadence and opulence juxtaposed with gritty primal energy. The hypnotic rhythms and swirling melodies transport listeners to this mystical realm filled with danger and intrigue. Dr. John's enigmatic persona and deep connection to his New Orleans roots shine brilliantly. He also gave us Black Widow Spider from his In the Right Place in 1973, with its soulful vocals and haunting melody evoking a spider's web, and Dance Kalinda Boom Boom from Distinctly Bonnaroo in 1975 with its driving rhythm and voodoo-inspired dance vibes. Dr. John brought authentic New Orleans mysticism and voodoo culture into mainstream Halloween music, giving it depth and cultural richness beyond simple monster themes. The 70s made Halloween music legitimate. It wasn't just novelty anymore. It was art. Artists were creating songs about mortality, philosophy, and the human condition using supernatural imagery. The theatrical elements pioneered by performers like Arthur Brown became more refined and mainstream. Arena rock made spectacle essential, and Halloween themes provided perfect opportunities for dramatic performances. In conclusion, The 1970s elevated Halloween music into a genuine artistic genre where musicians could explore profound themes of death, transformation, and the supernatural while creating commercially successful, culturally resonant work that proved spooky music could be both entertaining and meaningful, setting up the massive commercial explosion that would define the 1980s.
The 80s seems like when Halloween music really exploded commercially. What changed, Mr. Meg?
Everything. The MTV launched in 1981, and suddenly music became visual. Movies were incorporating pop music into their soundtracks more strategically. Halloween itself was becoming this massive commercial holiday. Today, it's an $11.6 billion business annually. Radio stations fully embraced Halloween as a marketing opportunity, and the streaming was on the horizon. The 80s turned Halloween music from a niche seasonal product into a major revenue generator. Artists and labels realized there was serious money in creating Halloween content, and the decade delivered some of the most iconic Halloween music ever produced. Let's start with the obvious one, Thriller. Michael Jackson's Thriller from 1982 is arguably the most important Halloween song ever created, and it's impossible to overstate its cultural impact. You can't make a list of Halloween music without including it because it's obvious for a reason. Thriller has inspired countless artists to create terrifying visuals and is arguably the music video to play when you want spooky ambiance. That music video, directed by John Landis, was a 14-minute short film that revolutionized what music videos could be. The choreography, the makeup, Vincent Price's iconic voiceover, the cinematic production values, it was unprecedented. Jackson wasn't just making a song, he was creating a cultural phenomenon. Those lyrics, because this is a thriller, Thriller Night, and no one's going to save you from the beast about to strike, became instantly iconic. The video premiered on MTV and became the most played video in the network's history. It proved that music videos could create events, that they could have narratives and production values rivaling actual films. Thriller won multiple awards. The album became the best-selling of all time, and Jackson solidified his status as the king of pop. Every Halloween since 1982, Thriller has been played millions of times. It's the ultimate example of how Halloween music could be commercially massive and artistically groundbreaking. Then there is Halloween music connected to movies. Ghostbusters by Ray Parker Jr. in 1984 is the perfect example of how movies and music form this symbolic, symbiotic relationship throughout the decade. The song was written specifically for the comedy film and became a massive hit on its own. That catchy chorus, who are you going to call? Ghostbusters, and the funky beat perfectly captured the fun, playful spirit of the movie. Parker created something that worked both as a standalone hit and as a perfect thematic complement to the film. The song reached number one on the Billboard Hot 100, and the music video featured cameos from celebrities and clips from the movie, creating cross-promotional magic. This was synergy at its finest. The song promoted the movie promoted the song, and both became cultural touchstones. The success of Ghostbusters showed that Halloween-themed content would dominate the summer blockbuster theme, not just October. Then you've got Good Man and a Bad Time by Ian Hunter, featured in the 1985 film Fright Night. For this, and there's more information about Ian Hunter and the song can be found in my book, On Track, Ian Hunter. Hunter, the former Mott the Hoople frontman, wrote this song exploring a man struggling with darker impulses, inspired by his own experiences with addiction and personal turmoil. The music video was heavily played on MTV and helped revive Hunter's career. Fright Night was this horror comedy about vampires in suburban America, and Hunter's new wave influenced track perfectly captured that blend of danger and style. The song became a fan favorite and staple of 80s new wave and punk rock, showing how movie tie-ins could introduce artists to new audiences. Halloween's music business model changed in the 80s. The streaming era hadn't arrived yet, but radio was becoming more sophisticated about programming and demographics. Halloween became an adult holiday as much as a children's one, and the radio embraced it from a marketing and promotional standpoint. Radio consultants like Fred Jacobs noted that Halloween grew into a major programming opportunity. While Christmas still dominated with playlists having millions of followers, Spotify's Christmas hits had 5.5 million followers, Halloween was gaining ground. Spotify's Halloween Party playlist had over 1.1 million followers and became the second biggest playlist in the United States during the holiday's Halloween season, with streams spiking up to about 1,110% on October 1st. Halloween was just really starting to put its hand up as a main contender for one of the key tentpole moments in the year, according to Spotify's global head of editorial. The 80s laid the groundwork for this transformation by proving Halloween content could generate serious revenue and audience engagement. The 1980s commercialized, legitimized, and globalized Halloween music. MTV became a musical, movies made it cinematic, and business made it profitable. Halloween transformed a niche seasonal market into a billion-dollar industry, and music was central to that transformation. Artists realized that they could create Halloween content that generated revenue year after year through radio play, streaming, licensing, and cultural staying power. In conclusion, the 80s proved that Halloween music was big business and enduring art, creating a template for seasonal music marketing that continues today, with songs like Monster Mash and Thriller generating millions annually, and new artists constantly trying to create the next great Halloween anthem that will echo through the decades.
Mr. Mink, looking back across all these decades, what is the biggest takeaway about Halloween music?
Well, Halloween music is this incredible mirror of American culture and how it's evolved over 70 years. Each decade brought its own anxieties, celebrations, and obsessions, and the music captured all of it. The 50s showed us post-war prosperity, turning horror into entertainment. The 60s demonstrated that supernatural themes could explore consciousness and social change. The 70s elevated into a legitimate artistic expression about mortality and philosophy. And the 80s proved it could be massively commercial while remaining culturally significant. But here's what really matters. These songs endure because they tap into universal human experiences, our fascination with death, transformation, fear, and the unknown. Whether it's Screamin' Jay Hawkins putting a spell on it, Donovan exploring seasons of change, Blue Oyster Cult telling us not to fear the Reaper, or Michael Jackson turning into a werewolf, these songs speak to something deeper than just monsters and ghosts. It's about being human, confronting our mortality, celebrating our darkness, and finding joy in what scares us. Halloween music proves that seasonal niche content could have lasting cultural and commercial value. It shows that traditions matter, that nostalgia is powerful, and that when music connects with cultural moments and human emotions, it becomes timeless. These songs will be playing every October for generations to come, connecting people across time through shared experiences of spooky fun and genuine artistic expression. That's a perfect note to end on. So in conclusion, go put on some Halloween music and embrace the season of the witch.
Season of the Witch. And thank you, Mr. Meek, for sharing your knowledge and wisdom to the world. Halloween explores the eerie evolution of music that has defined the spooky season, from ghostly classics from the 1930s to today's chilling soundscape. So, Mr. Meek, would you like to plug in something?
Sure. Thanks for the opportunity. Write the book, grow the business. Connect with me on LinkedIn, GMIC, the Doctor of Digital Smith, PhD. Listen to the podcast, the Doctor of Digital podcast. And of course, pick up a couple of volumes I have on Amazon. That's On Track, Ian Hunter and Burning America.
Yes, people, I support Mr. Mink, the Doctor of Digital. And please do listen to our baby podcast, Mental Health 101. Mental Health 101 is created to empower our mental health awareness. So, Mr. Mink, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, my friend. Till next time, Deus Vult.
Mordecai, people, see you soon.